that my name's Lou and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. And that I'm not an expert in AA at the digital age or anything else, but that's what we're talking about today. I have some experience and some opinions, unfortunately, and I'll share those with you. I've had a hobby and a career, and then again a hobby with computers and software for over 40 years. I built my first computer, wire wrap printed circuit boards, soldering irons and chips, in 1975, and have loved every twist and turn and tortured moment learning, building, wiring, debugging, testing, and deploying in this insanely rapid, changing industry that has afforded me. I used to boast that if I wasn't doing this for a living, I would do it as a hobby, and then probably because of that arrogance, God gave me the opportunity to do it as a hobby again after I was laid off. After I was laid off from Bell Labs in 2002. I had my first email account before 1980, and as what we now know as the Internet was birthed and growing in the 80s, I was an active supporter and participant in the Internet's precursors of bulletin boards and net news groups. It was therefore with some authority and arrogance that I was the one who, in the early to mid-1990s, decried the very idea that my area, Area 10 in Colorado, have some sort of email service or, God forbid, website. I knew for a fact that that way there be dragons. And our very soul as a fellowship was at risk because at risk by putting information into the building, roiling morass of the Internet. Yes, I was the jerk who, at every opportunity, assured anyone who would listen that you don't want to put anything on a website that you wouldn't want published on the front page of the Denver Post. I still sort of believe that, but I feel I must now be willing to grow. By way of amends and mellowing of those opinions and perspectives, I was given the privilege of chairing the Area 10 task force that created our area's website and guideline process. Area 10 has now had a website for about 12 years and is still finding its way. Throughout my time in AA service, I have come to respect, maybe even have a reverence for, the almost glacial pace with which we integrate change into our fellowship. However, I also feel that as pertains to AA's digital interests, that way there also be dragons. At a personal level, about 7 or 8 years ago, I began to wonder what we really mean when we grow in our lives and practice these principles in all our affairs. Specifically, I realized that I was very much out of step with integrating my professional and personal computer life with my much more important spiritual life in the AA Fellowship. There were incongruities between my occasional enthusiastic embrace and experimentation in what we now call social media and my reticence at offering a newcomer my email address, which included some of my name. It was interesting to me that my home group then had a GSR who first discovered her problem and a solution by reading the Big Book online before she went to her first meeting and had a chance to even meet one of us. At that time, AA and GSO had little or no literature or information available online. Then I decided to see what was out there in the Internet regarding general discussion of AA principles. After all, I was sure I wasn't the only member of AA giving thoughtful consideration to this topic. I was horrified. It's even worse today. Google anything about AA and see what comes up. It's disgusting, and I feel like not only is this fellowship that has saved my life under threat, but it would take a miracle for a suffering alcoholic to find the solution I've found in AA with so much confusion ranging from folks with various agendas promoting private interests such as treatment centers and therapies to absolute vitriol directed at AA from various online sources. Where are our friends who would recommend us in this morass? I felt an immediate mandate toward action. I would use my computer talents and skills to provide a view in contrast to the venomous perspectives AA was being attacked by. After a while, and through some expert sponsorship, I was reminded that in our program, we ceased fighting anyone or anything. This started a year-long odyssey where I blogged anonymously and participated in open discussions online about AA and AA principles. I maintained my identity and my anonymity using an avatar and found a whole community of folks online who were available to me for a loving and supporting conversation about what is important about living a principled, spirit-led, God-centered life. At the same time, it seemed almost certain that well-meaning members sharing on Facebook and Twitter were hell-bent toward ignoring all the traditions and sharing their life's interests and activities. A few sought my counsel as to how to protect their and my anonymity in the confusing and ever-changing Facebook privacy options. I'm sure some of my time the next few weeks will be spent removing my being tagged in Facebook photos from Atlanta as I was in San Antonio 5 years ago. I wonder if any more of us would do that, take so many pictures and thoughtlessly tag others, if the perfectly clear anonymity instructions that Jill and everybody else has read before every session were not read at the beginning of each meeting and printed in the front of our program materials and everything that's going on. So, what about AA in a digital age? This is not the first time that AA as a whole has been faced with a big challenge. For example, changes which were perhaps as large as those facing us today were faced when we decided, with strong sentiment against, to publish our big book in 1939, when we evolved our current conference and leadership structure, when we found our friends recommending us highly and then experienced overwhelming growth in numbers during the explosion of the treatment centers around the country, and then several times across our history when we, largely through mistakes, learned the value and the challenges of the principle of anonymity. As recently as a few years ago, when AAWS finally decided that they wanted our big book available online, we made an agreement to sell it on Amazon. Some people seemed shocked when our big book showed up with automated recommendations for people who bought this also bought or looked at some arbitrary book on booze or living better. After terminating that relationship, AAWS decided to provide a proprietary solution. Did anybody really think this was a good idea? And now we're finally e-publishing our big book in a manner which allows members limited options to use our basic text as a resource. These are, in my opinion, some mistakes which I hope, we're still trying to learn from. My point is that AA, both as individual members and as a whole, can and does adapt to new ideas and come to a new perfect good. We do this when we are willing to apply our basic principles as outlined in our 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts to opportunities presented in this digital age. Bill W. talked about this 50 years ago this month in preparation for the Great Convention in Toronto. Quoting one paragraph here, he says, "Let us never fear needed change. Certainly we have to discriminate between changes for the better and changes for the worse. But once a need becomes clearly apparent in an individual, a group, or in AA as a whole, it has long since been found out that we cannot stand still and look the other way. The essence of all growth is a willingness to change for the better, and then an unremitting willingness to shoulder whatever responsibility." I think were Bill W. still alive today, A, he couldn't have imagined the opportunity afforded us in this digital age, and B, we'd be in a whole different place. That reminds me, we're now firmly in that perilous part of this talk which I warned you about, my opinions. I think we in AA must be in and of this digital age. In case you haven't noticed, we're all in an increasingly digital age. I'm the night watch coordinator for my home group, Saturday Night Jive. Night watch is a program where the phones from Boulder County Central Office are forwarded to a member's phone when the office is closed. We are receiving significantly fewer calls than we ever have. It's not that there are fewer drunks in Boulder County, but I've heard from some 911 emergency services that their call volumes are going down as well. If you call my kids or grandkids, don't bother leaving them a voice message. Some don't even have their mail set up. In fact, don't even bother calling them because they're likely not to answer. If it's important, they know you will text them or contact them on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or whatever, wherever it is they hang out these days. AA Today is spending thousands of hours and dollars each month supporting and maintaining services that the next generation of drunks will not use because communication is moving past what many of us are familiar with. We need to learn new ways to be where people will want to contact us. Most importantly, we, the AA Fellowship, need to learn how to place the best that AA has and is in front of the public and the potential member in this digital age. It grieves me greatly that the majority of voices that are heard on the internet today about AA are those who wish to destroy AA as we know it. Even among those who would stand for our fellowship as represented by AA members, much of what exists online is either of poor quality or ill-conceived. Suffice to say that as pertains to AA, as I understand it, the noise-to-signal ratio is very high. In 2009, at the Southwest Regional Forum in Dallas, it was reported by GSO that management at Twitter had come forward and informed them that someone had registered at Alcoholics Anonymous as a Twitter handle. The general manager took appropriate actions and had that handle taken down. What I would suggest is that this is both the best and the worst response to this situation. While I hate the thought of yet one more crackpot inside or outside AA spewing opinion or outside agendas on social media in the name of AA, it still upsets me that AA, as we celebrate it here this weekend, is not represented in this part of the digital world at this time. Even our AA.org website, and I'm sorry if I'm getting personal with some of you here, in my opinion, speaks poorly for our fellowship. While in some areas our AA.org website has improved greatly recently, as the public-facing front door for AA, my opinion is that it's severely deficient. For example, most of us here can appreciate why, because of our corporate organizational structure, there's a separate AA Grapevine website. However, can any one of us really defend the decision to have a "you are now leaving AAWS" linking page on AA.org before be taken to a website with a wholly different look, feel, and navigation for the AA Grapevine? Even this convention is treated more as a first-class citizen on the AA.org website than the magazine, which is supposed to be our meeting in print. Some areas and central service offices are ahead of GSO in web design and usability, but most are even further behind in terms of their applied technology. There's no doubt in my mind that no area or central office could be confused as affiliated with each other or AA as a whole. In the time-honored AA way, there are no standards or design clues which indicate these entities are even remotely related to each other. In the 25-plus years and 3-plus generations of the modern Internet, most of the rest of the world has learned what is placed on websites and how we navigate content. Using technology is becoming intuitive to many generations simultaneously on computers, tablets, and phones. This online world is changing rapidly now and will be changing even more rapidly in the future. There's no doubt in my mind that at least one of the grandchildren represented in this room will find their way to their first meeting via their watch or some other wearable or maybe even implantable device. It is my hope and prayer that we in the fellowship are smart enough to figure this out. I think we have to. How and where to place information and how to accomplish both representing the AA message to the newer potential member seems like a problem we must solve. As important, or perhaps more importantly, is our participation in the digital age as members. At my home group last Saturday night, our speaker spoke of placing his picture of his 12-year chip on his Facebook profile. I'm not here to judge his decision to do that or debate whether or how God used this toward a better God. What I am most pleased about from last Saturday is the half hour we spent at coffee afterwards discussing our various experiences around participating on social media and why we'd made those decisions. I learned some things about Facebook's ever-changing privacy settings at the least, and might have participated in five of us evolving better understanding to how to practice these principles in our 12 steps, traditions, and concepts in a digital age. As with so many things in this wonderful program, I find the questions as to how and where AA can and should participate in the digital age much more important than the answers we have today, as all of the technologies we're getting answers for will change before we get anything really figured out. Some of the things we discussed last Saturday include: 1, how anonymous should I be online and why? 2, how and why should I protect others' anonymity online? 3, where and how is it important that I let people know that I am sober or an AA member? 4, what are the risks to others and to myself with my open disclosures? 5, What are the specific tools I can use to monitor and maintain the level of anonymity I consider important? 6, given the corporate interests of Facebook, Twitter, Google, and other social media may not align with AA principles, how and where is it appropriate to use these tools in my life where I practice these principles in all of my affairs? 7, how can we be sure that we are carrying the AA message to those who live a great deal of their lives online? And 8, as we focus on those online, how can we be sure that the same message and opportunities are still available to those who can't or won't find a solution online? At other conversations here at this International around our fellowship, I've been privileged to participate in discussions of other questions like, 1, what is the best way we can support our fellowship in its primary purpose through using online resources? 2, how can we improve our online AA presence to better communicate our message of recovery? 3, what can we do to make sure that online information is easy to get to, navigate, and all the information is accurate and up to date? 4, what group, district, area, GSO processes could be improved by online interfaces? And 5, how can we have the best online experiences, meetings, workshops, intergroup, and other services, discussion boards, etc., best reflect our AA principles and processes? As we discuss these questions at coffee, with our sponsors, with our sponsees, as workshop topics and conference agenda items, it is my hope that we will evolve toward a conscience that will stand us well in the digital age. I think we might be getting there. I think that it's great that we have several sessions dealing with online internet-related topics at this convention. Discussions at past conventions have opened my eyes with through others' experience. I still see more posturing than progress some days. It seems there is a great fear amongst us that we will lose something in our fellowship as it embraces online tools and participation, or the fear that we're not reaching the alcoholic who needs us. We're not at our best when we live in these fears. But I've also been blessed with in meeting with folks who have a high regard for all of our principles in all of their lives, including active online life in this digital age. God bless us all on this exciting journey. Thank you again.
Thank you, Lou. Now I have the pleasure of introducing Cindy F. from Fairfax, Virginia.
Afternoon, everybody. My name's Cindy. I'm an alcoholic. I just asked Lou if I could just reread his, so not usually told to move the mic. Thank you. My home group is the Fourth Dimension Big Book group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet in Fairfax City on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. Come on by, please, not all at once, if you're ever in town. My sobriety date's April 23rd, 1994, and I'm eternally grateful for that day. Printed it big enough, I may not need those. I want to thank the committee for asking me to serve. I actually got a call about 10 days ago because somebody, Linda, could not be here. So if I'm not in any written program, and so if you don't like what I had, I'm just going to go by Linda, and we'll let her sort that out. So I've been asked to share my experience, strength, and hope on AA in the digital age. Much of my service work over the past several years has been kind of centered around this topic, not to be an expert, but I've just done a lot of research, and that's all I present to you today is research. I'm hoping you guys walk out with more of questions than answers, because I don't have the answer. Once I think one way, something else pops in, and I think something else, and I think that's part of change, right? It just goes back and forth. So I didn't want to go into a long story of when I got sober, everything was better, we did AA right, no one gets it now. So instead, I'm going to share what my experience has been over the last 21 years as it relates to the digital age and my sobriety, I hope. I, too, have a few opinions, so thanks for greasing the skids there, Lou. When I first got sober, I worked for the local telephone company. And yes, that was the kind where you had to go to the wall, pick up the device, go like that. You also weren't allowed to walk too far away or you'd get jerked back. So that was, you know, what we used. It was a great tool. And I actually had to remember people's phone numbers. I don't know about you guys, but think real quickly. I know two phone numbers. One is my partner, one is my sponsor. But other than that, I pretty much have to look on my list, right? It used to be a little different. The cool thing I had back then was a pager. I was pretty awesome. Cell phones were awful expensive back then, and if you were really cool, you got to have one mounted in your car, and the big antenna was put on the roof. And it dawned on me the other night, they used to sell just the antennas, like as gadget shops, to put on the roof so you could be cool, too, without the expense. So it was that option, or you had a mobile phone, which came in a bag, and it weighed about 15 pounds, and you got to lug it around and plug it in, and that was mobility back then. With the pager, I had, I guess we started the whole idea of texting because we had little signals we would send people. For instance, 43770 spells out hello when you get it in a pager. That was as techie as we could get at that time. But you knew it was a good day because, you know, you got a text and somebody said hello. Of course, you couldn't do anything because there's no way to dial from that. You had to go to a payphone, take out 25 cents or a dime, whatever it was at the time, and stick it. You don't even have payphones anymore, but for those of you who've never seen one, they're really kind of cool. But I worked for the phone company, and we could just plug our sets right into the wires and dial up whoever we wanted. So we did have free phones whenever we needed them. I guess that was kind of mobile. So getting sober meant that you actually had to call people at their home, leave a message on a message machine, and that was another device that we used to have a lot of, and you had to wait. You had to wait for a callback. Because the other thing that has changed a little bit is I called you, I left you a message, let's go, come on, where's my callback, right? I texted you, call me, let's go, we got to do something. Back then, we didn't do that. Left the message, and we knew when they got home from work, they might get to it then or the next day, and then they'd call us back, and that's how we did speed back then. So you get a little antsy, and you'd leave that message, and if they didn't return your call in an hour or so, that was okay, you know, because we didn't expect it to be with instantaneous. So to call your friends to organize events, you know, today we send out a group whatever, and everyone responds immediately, and at 2 hours later, you all at the coffee shop. And we didn't do that then. You had to call each person. And you didn't just call and said, hey, meet me. You actually had to be nice and say, hello, how are you today? It's really great to talk to you. I saw you at the meeting. It was great to catch up, all that kind of fun stuff. So we spent a lot of time calling and setting up and planning. Those were the days. But anyway, the pace was a bit slower. Plans were often determined far in advance. If you were hurting, someone would say, come on over to the house, let's sit down and have a cup of coffee and talk about it. We didn't have coffee houses, and I sometimes like these little statistics. We didn't have coffee houses on every single corner, so I went back in 94, the year I got sober. In the U.S., there were 3,600 coffee shops. Today, according to what I read, there are over 55,000 just in the U.S. alone. So it's like way over 10 times, like 15 times as many. So we have little places to go now. We used to go to your house and sit in the kitchen like Bill and Bob did. So where was I? Oh, yes. We used to talk, right? We used to talk a lot. We would call intergroup or central office and ask where the meeting was. They would actually graciously tell us how to get there. Where do you live? What road? Okay, well, this is how you go. You know that big McDonald's on the corner? Take a right, and the meeting's over there. I'm pretty sure back then they didn't say, well, just Google it. Here's the address. We all know that wasn't true. Once at the meeting, we would have an AA meeting. The AA topic du jour would be discussed. An hour or an hour and a half later, the group would close in the manner in which that group closes in. Phone numbers were exchanged and calls were made. Sometimes we'd do the meeting after the meeting. We'd all go out and have coffee, you know, because you wanted to get to sleep that night. I want to point out to you that we weren't asking people to silence their cell phones or other communication devices. That didn't exist. And we were certainly not too concerned about that guy over in the corner who was texting throughout the whole meeting and not paying attention. So 94, 95 goes on. So what happened? Well, change. You remember the only thing in this world is a constant is change. And that has been true for me. I finally got that cell phone, mobile device, in 1996, mounted in the car with the big antenna. I was so cool. God, I was cool. But it was so damn expensive, you couldn't make any phone calls. But I was happening. I had that technology. And technology really did begin to explode back in the 90s. I mean, things were happening very quickly, and Lou alluded to that. A lot of things were happening very fast. And everything just seemed to accelerate in our lives. So when I came into the first international that I went to in Toronto in 2005, I don't know that we had this topic. We might have. But I'm pretty sure in 95 or 2000 or 1990 we didn't. So something's changing. Something's changing, and we need to pay attention. But there seems to be a battle being waged on the use of technology in AA. The digital age is an age of the nanosecond, a time when we think something, take action, and it happens. Many of us walk around with a cell phone that is tied to our body, and I love what he said about implanted device. I believe these are, actually, extensions. But we walk around with a cell phone, email, banking, all of our phone numbers, all of our financial information, all of our social media connections, our camera. It's all right there all the time. So a lot has changed. For those of us who've gone on to the website and downloaded the big book, you also have all your literature there. You can just whip it out in a meeting at any time. God, I'm so smart. Just break to that point right away. But anyway, we don't remember phone numbers anymore, and that to me is sad. We text or post everything to everybody within seconds of it happening. If you don't have a mobile device, you're kind of left out of the loop sometimes. You aren't invited to parties. Not purposely. You just didn't get the evite. So I dare say that if you still own one of those, flip phones, we're not communicating. Or God forbid, you don't have a mobile device at all. Flip phone users, unite, yes. So we run in and out of stores, in and out of school, in and out of work, and yes, in and out of meetings with that device on our hand, in our head, and we never look up. I guarantee you, if you were to look around your room in the meeting, I would love to ask you how many people's color of their eyes would you know? Because most of us don't. Not only have we learned to do this, we've also learned to do this, and we don't look up very much anymore. We've done a great job of being 150% connected to everyone who has ever been in our lives. We connect with people we care about and stalk those that we want to forget about. Is that just me? I don't think so. We post and tweet to everyone where we're going and what we're doing, and I'm guilty of this on a regular basis, and an area that I'm probably going to need to look at when I get out of here today. But why is it so important to me to post my goings-on in my world to all of you? I am pretty sure there's people in this audience who are on my Facebook page, and I'm pretty sure there's some of them going, oh, my God, you wouldn't believe what she tells us. And I'd like to get her off, but I don't want to unfriend her because that's just so socially awkward. So who cares? You know, the bottom line is that we need to adjust as things adjust. And that is a new technology for most of us, and life is happening crazy fast, and we all need to figure out what works best for us. The challenge is we have the challenge we have is to safeguard our traditions, Alcoholics Anonymous traditions, through the evolution of this technology. I hate to say it, folks, but this is not new stuff. Lou alluded to it, and I'm sure the next speaker will as well. Given the speed of technology and the rate that it's moving, the important thing may be to discuss how our members may be challenged to be mindful of our traditions that protect our fellowship and therefore our very lives. I'm a firm believer that I would be dead today if I didn't get sober at the very moment I did. I've always been concerned about protecting the fellowship, and I do believe if we fail, it will be from within. Our traditions are solid, proven through experience, the path that AA has kept to stay safe from the outside influences. While I was growing up in AA, I was taught that we are responsible for helping the next alcoholic who walks into the rooms. I was also taught we are equally responsible for protecting our fellowship for ourselves and those who are still to come. So I learned that without our traditions, our groups would fall into chaos and fail. Remember, our traditions were developed on the anvils of our own experiences. They are our traditions. Are our traditions extinct? Why are we so concerned about how the digital age may affect AA, our recovery, our fellowship? Well, I'd like to explore that a little bit. The first thing we need to remember is that we have no control over technology. Well, some of us may, because depending on your industry or what you do for a living, like me, I'm in the IT world. So, yeah, I have a little bit of control, which my friends know is a bad thing. But most of us have no control over what's going on. It's just happening. But the reality is, a society is technologically moving at the speed of light. I believe that our traditions are strong and will provide us with guidance to keep us moving forward with all that comes. When the traditions were written, it was thought that mail, or those of you who've never used that, snail mail, as you may call it, radio and newspapers were going to be the mode of communication for decades to come. Films were costly, TVs didn't exist in every home. Throughout time, we've seen technology evolve into smaller, faster, more efficient means of communicating. So as much as we may want to think this is a new challenge, this is not unique. We've been struggling with this for 80 years. The second thing we need to understand is that it's up to us, AA members, to protect our traditions. The world at large is not on the hook for keeping our traditions safe. The ever-speeding technological world is not responsible for following or even respecting our traditions. It is up to each one of us as AA members to respect and protect our principles. That means that we have to pass it on. When new people come into the rooms, we need to pass on our three legacies: unity expressed through our traditions, recovery expressed through our steps, and the service expressed through the concepts. It's not only young people. For all the old people who want to blame it on the young people, it's not only young people. It's all our new folks. We need to pass it on. We need to know what they are, how they play out in our meetings and in our lives. As important as the steps are to my recovery, the traditions are important to the fellowship's survival. I was taught that all our traditions support the very first tradition, that of AA unity. If I am knowingly in conflict or ignoring the traditions of our fellowship, what I'm really saying is, they don't understand me. I'm unique. They're for other people. I could also be saying, those are rules for all of you, but I understand them, and I will roughly abide them by them when convenient. I challenge each of us to look inward when we talk about our traditions, as they relate to our groups, to me, and to AA as a whole. Most AA members I know have signed on to the idea that the 12 steps, if practiced, will provide them with a sober living. They'll become happily and usefully whole as a result of working the steps. I see nods. We all get that. Our members that are active in general service, there's a pretty good understanding of the 12 concepts. We get that. We understand it. We see them in action. The gift of that is that we have a fellowship that continues to strive. Sometimes we tend to balk at the whole. Our fellowship is responsible for the health and well-being of our fellowship. That's the first concept. We are responsible. We've heard that before about getting sober. It's about our saving our own lives, too. Since we agreed as a fellowship in 1955 at one of these very conventions in St. Louis to take responsibility for our fellowship going forward, it is our responsibility to address all of these issues around AA and a digital age. My experience is that when we think about traditions only applying to other groups, other members, or perhaps don't agree with them at all, the unity of our fellowship is our primary reason for having those traditions. Our ability to stay unified is our chance at survival. We are each a small part of the greater whole. Our common welfare comes first. That means whatever is best for all of us is the right path for the fellowship. That is why our fully informed group conscience, expressed in Tradition 2, is so important. We, not the group leaders, not the district or the area leaders or New York, They're not responsible. We are. We are responsible for all of our fellowship. We must use the tools that we have learned work best for us, and the informed group conscience is definitely one of them. I know that when I'm challenging the group conscience, and if I am thinking of myself, we can do this, no one will know, this is our group's decision, we can do that, we're autonomous. This is similar to what I used to think when I was drinking. My drinking had no effect on anyone else, it just damaged me. I know how that came out in the end. I'd like to share with you some thoughts Bill Wilson had, one of our founders, about the impact of the following our traditions in AA and in all AA matters. This comes out of a writing he had prior to the 1955 convention, and it's now a pamphlet called How AA Tradition Developed. And I'm going to run through this, but it's an awesome pamphlet if you can get a hold of it. How shall we AAs preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power which he now holds him together in one piece overcomes those forces which had set him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties that bind us together prove far stronger than the forces that which would divide us, if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. If, as AA members, we can reach refuge, we each refuse public prestige and renounce any desire for personal power, if as a movement we insist that on remaining poor, so avoiding disputes about extensive property and its management, if we steadfastly decline all political, sectarian, and other alliances, we shall avoid internal division and public notoriety. Try that one three times fast. If, as a movement, we remain a spiritual entity concerned only with carrying our message to fellow sufferers without charge or obligation, then only can we most effectively complete our mission. It is becoming ever so clear that we ought to never accept even the most alluring temporary benefits if these should consist of considerable sums of money or could involve us in controversial alliances and endorsements, or might tempt us to accept AA as AA members personally, publicly, by personal publicity by press or radio. Unity is so vital to us as AA that we cannot risk these attitudes and practices, which have sometimes demoralized other forms of human societies. Thus far, we have succeeded because we have been different. We may continue to be so. So he goes on to talk about the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous and how important it is for our very fellowship to succeed. He said, nobody invented Alcoholics Anonymous. It grew trial and error, has produced rich experience. Little by little, we have been adopting the lessons of that experience, first as policy, then as tradition. Yet the lessons of our experience count for a great deal. We now have had years of vast acquaintance with the problem of living and working together. If we can succeed in this adventure and keep succeeding, then only then will our future be secure. So Bill goes on to write throughout that pamphlet, and I think it's one that should be on everybody's shelf. There's an opinion. It's just critical. It talks all about what we do. Still, it is a fact that most of us do follow in our personal lives that the 12 suggested steps to recovery. But we do this from choice. We prefer recovery to death. Then little by little, we perceive the spiritual basis of life is the best. We conform because we want to. Likewise, most AA groups become willing to follow the 12 points of tradition to assure our future. The groups are willing to avoid controversy over outside issues such as political reform or religion. They stick to their single purpose of helping alcoholics to recover. So what does this mean? What does all this mean to our digital age? I think it means everything. I think those writings were written with us in mind. My experience is that each one of us has a yardstick by which we measure our behavior against others. After we got sober and joined AA fellowship, our additional yardsticks becomes those of the steps and the traditions. Our sponsors help us to understand how to live the steps. Our sponsors need to also help us understand the importance of traditions for the very life of the fellowship. Alcoholics tend to, I'm going to make this reference, and I'm sure it's no one here, but we tend to have a dislike for authority. Those traditions do act as authority, and we like to buck the system. So when it comes to whether or not I'm going to break my anonymity or someone else's on social media, let's think about why we think or are justifying that that is okay. I had a conversation with a young man just yesterday, and we were talking about anonymity, and he said, I have a job which I love, and I will never, ever leave. I believe he's about 28 years old. He said, so breaking my anonymity on social media has no impact to me in the long term. This is my career. And I just want to think back to how many times I had that hard and fast, this is the way it will always be forever, amen. And then 5 or 6 years later, it was completely different. My belief structure was different, and my whole outlook on life was different. Not only when I got sober, but also in recovery. I come from the D.C. area and work for the government contractor. Did you know that I can actually apply for a job with the federal government or a contractor in some agencies because I'm an alcoholic in recovery over 20 years sober? They don't care. You're drunk. It's critical. So I'm very cautious about my anonymity. I saw out at the anonymity booth upstairs over there yesterday. I got to sit there yesterday, and they have this great little banner, and it says, we can ruin the anonymity in an instant of one touch. That was pretty powerful to me. Anybody heard anything about the data breaches recently of the Office of Personnel Management in the U.S. government with several million employees? All their personal data is out on the net. It's been hacked. That's not good. But we don't know it's coming. We know it's out there. And the challenge is, what's in Facebook? What are you putting in there that's going to end up somewhere that you don't want it to be? Yeah, you have your private groups. Yes, it's only these people know. It's out there, guys. I was taught also that if you put it online, it's on the front page of the Washington Post. We don't have a Denver Post. We have the Washington Post. So I try to be very cautious, and sometimes I just throw it to the wind, and I shoot myself in the foot, and I go, why am I doing this? What's so important? What's so important about me? This isn't just social media. I also wanted to share that I found that texting sponsees loses something in the translation. A little different than the old get in the car. So for me, I will text sponsees to where we're going to meet. We're going to have coffee. I'm going to this meeting. But we're talking anything beyond that. We're having a conversation. Because this is going to drive me crazy. And I don't spell really well, so it gets really confusing. There's something about that direct face-to-face that helps us walk through this stuff a lot easier and a lot faster. So I want to say some things that are good about the digital age for AA. Did you guys know that you can make contributions online at AA.org? You can do it monthly. You can do it weekly. You can do your group contributions that way. You can make your personal contributions and tell them the group you're with, and it all gets attributed to your group. There's also groups that I've heard use a cube, which is a little device you stick on your phone, and they just run their ATM cards over it when they pass it around for Seventh Tradition meeting. Wow. That's trust right there, I got to tell you. Did you know there are groups that meet via Skype, that they have meetings via Skype, which is a face-to-face online meeting? That's pretty cool. That wasn't an option 5 years ago. Imagine what that does to somebody who's homebound who can't get out. Just sick. You know, treatment, whatever. They can't get out. They can get Skyped into a meeting. How cool is that? What about carrying the message? The information we have on our AA.org is accessible to everybody instantaneously. Now, it might be kind of hard to find, but it's there. Did you know our public service announcements are on YouTube? They're on YouTube. So if somebody's cruising around YouTube, drunk, looking for some, they're not going to be happy when our PSA shows up. But it will. I actually did meet somebody who got sober through watching late-night TV. I'm, again, not you guys, who stumbled across after a drunken debauch, you know, saw this public service announcement about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they called the number. I never thought that was possible. So districts and area committees can inform everybody real quick, right? Here's what we're doing. This is what we're doing. I think it gets a little funky when we're trying to do group conscience on email. That doesn't really fit with our principles because not everybody has email. And I want to get to the point where I end. I'm way out of time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I get like that. One more page. So I just want to remind us all that, you know, when I got here, I didn't have a phone. We didn't have phones. And there are people who are walking into my rooms today that are homeless or just about to be homeless. They don't have a phone. They don't have a computer. They don't have a PC. They don't have anything living on their hip that tells them what time it is. It's, you know, it's lifetime. And if we continue to rush through in a digital age and get all the digital stuff done, that's great for those of us who are that way. But we have the unique responsibility to reach our hands out both ways. And we cannot just drop off our hard-copied big books, and we cannot drop off our paper and our face-to-face and our stuff that needs to be there for the guy that can't read because he's been trashed for years and he can't even read anymore. And we're expecting him to go to AA.org and download the big book. Nope. We still got to do it the right way, guys. And we can do it both ways. We just have to be mindful of our traditions throughout that process. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Now I would like to introduce our final speaker. His name is Daniel S. from Houston, Texas.
Hey, my name is Daniel. I'm an alcoholic. You guys hear me all right from here? Okay, cool. I live in Houston. My home group's the Tuesday Night Step, which happens to be on Tuesday nights. I got sober November 4th of 1996, and just super grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, for everybody who's come before and after. It's just an amazing thing to be a part of, and it's really an honor to be asked to speak at any AA meeting, and especially here, it's just a cool place to be. So AA in the digital age, super interesting topic. When they asked me to speak on it, I was pretty excited. Let me back up a little bit and kind of mini qualify. First drink at 15, loved it, drank more and more, graduated high school at 16, dropped out of college at 17, got married at 17, continued, more and more drinking, just loved it. I mean, it was, why wouldn't you? And, anything that you love, you just do more. And that's what I did. And I was divorced at 7. I was divorced before I was 18. What else happened? I mean, I was, by the time I was 19, I was just a mess. I mean, you guys know the drill. It was bad. And at 20, just after I turned 28, I got sober, and I was broken, like most people that come into AA. And I'd, pushed away my family, and, when I was out there and getting sober, I had to move back in with them. And that's when I'm thinking of the digital age in my own experience of getting sober at that time. The internet was new to me. I guess it was relatively, at least, on a grand scale, was relatively new then. I didn't have social skills like I guess a lot of people in here, and going to meetings, I just sat in the corner, like on the floor, and didn't talk to people. I was afraid to look people in the eye. I didn't have a cell phone at the time, didn't have anything, but I couldn't look at you. I couldn't talk to you. I just showed up and I listened, and people tried to talk to me, but it was just horrible at conversing. But when I got home from the meeting, I had the internet, and so I could get online and started going into chat rooms, and that's basically where I learned how to speak, sober, and have conversations with people, because I couldn't do it in meetings. I just couldn't face you and have a a conversation, but having that sort of barrier of distance and they couldn't see me, I felt way more comfortable that way. And so I really feel like I learned to communicate for the first time, because I never really learned to communicate, but I feel like I learned online, you know, in early sobriety, on talking to people who were in AA, I think. And then in real life, it took me about 9 months to be able to have a conversation with somebody other than my sponsor. And apparently the icebreaker was, "Aren't you glad we're having weather?" That was like the best I could pull off. So with my sponsor, you know, started to work the steps like most people in here, I hope. And, you know, you get there, you do the first and second and third and do the fourth. And I was getting pretty comfortable with the internet at the time. And so I got to the fifth step, and God, myself, and another human being, I think I'll just put it online. So I posted my fourth step online, made a website. I thought it was a good way to do a fifth step because it just covers everything. And nothing really horrible came of it. I mean, I don't know that too many people actually saw it, but some people did, and they would email me and ask questions and everything. So, but I told my sponsor, he was like, "No, that's no good. You gotta do it with me or somebody." So I did it the real way. And anyway, over time, you know, had a spiritual awakening. We went from that broken person to somebody who could have, you know, relatively normal conversations, and have just had an amazing life in AA. And over the years, the computer has always been something that's been constant since I got sober. And let's see, I got involved in service reluctantly when I was about 7 or 8 years sober, I'd say. And, I had to go to the meetings, and it was just nothing that I didn't want to go to all the extra meetings being a GSR, but started going to the district meetings and the area meetings, and really started to find, it was cool. It was like a whole another part of AA, and some of the things that we got, into doing had to do with, how do we carry the message, using these new tools that are available to us. And I've got several things that I was, before I got up here, I was thinking of all the different things I could talk about, but I'll try to remember, because I always forget everything that I wanted to say, basically. But anyway, I'll just go through a few. So in districts and on committees, you can have conversations about different ways to carry the message and come up with new ideas and implement them, as a group, and have endless discussions about traditions and, just try to do the right thing. And trial periods are always good for drunks. But one of the things that I did when I was on a committee was we had a lot of us didn't have direct 12-step experience. So like where I got sober, so a drunk would call intergroup and they would say, "I need help." And then the intergroup had a list of phone numbers, and they would call the people on the list, and the people on the list would go pick up the drunk and take care of them. And so that was the experience where I got sober. But later on, when I had moved to a different city, the intergroup basically, when somebody called the intergroup looking for help, the intergroup would say, "Well, the next meeting is, at such and such street at 6 o'clock. So go ahead and go yourself." So what we decided was that none of us were getting the experience of having these sort of direct 12-step experience with people. And so we wanted to see if there's anything we could do with the digital tools to try to make that happen. So we did a pretty simple thing. We just put a form on our website that, hey, if you need help, fill out this form, and somebody will contact you, and we'll come meet you where you are. And so we put it up. We didn't know whether anybody was going to fill it out. Had basically no concept, but we thought it would be a good thing to do. And if people did, at least we would get the experience of that 12-step work that we were looking for. And so, yeah, we put it up, and people actually started filling out the form. And so we had somebody on our committee whose job it was to get the requests and to field them to the appropriate sets of people to go and meet them. And for years after that, the highlight of the committee meeting was always getting the report from the person who had that job. Because, you get into a service, and there's, several hour meetings of about all kinds of nonsense, but to have that portion of the meeting, 5 minutes even, where it was like, and we got four 12-step calls this week, and, two of them didn't show up, but two of them did, and we met them for coffee, and then we went out to the meeting, and they got a sponsor, and it was just awesome to have that experience of people, on our end, the people who had been sober, getting that 12-step experience, and then for the people who had been introduced to AA that way. I think we started that, I want to say, in 2009. And in 2011 or so, I was in the position of fielding the request that came in. 2011, I left the area I was in, and they had an election for somebody else to fill that role on the committee. And the person who was elected to the position to field them was somebody who filled out the form and got sober through filling out the form on the site. So it was an awesome feeling. I mean, it's always from the very first time somebody called me when I was probably around a year sober and said they wanted to talk, and I had no idea what to do, but just being there for somebody else's service has always felt so amazing, like electric, better than anything I've ever felt before, and it continues to be. There's so much, it's such a big topic, and I guess one other thing, and I don't know how much time I have. Let's see. Okay, cool. We got a little bit of time. So one of the things I've been thinking about over the last year and have talked about in a number of different committees that I'm on is, it's been sort of alluded to here, is that, Google's big. Everybody, it's like the phone book, basically, from ages ago. I don't know who has a phone book anymore, but now people use Google, for better or for worse. And anybody in here, if you have some time after this meeting, or at the next meeting, or whenever you are on your phone, do a Google search and look for something that you would have looked for, when you were out there and you thought you needed help. So, try something like stop drinking or quit drinking or where do I find help for a drinking problem? Do any of those types of searches and see where AA ends up in the results, and you'll be there for a long time. Because it's nowhere to be found, and so that's an issue like Lou mentioned, the treatment centers and other entities and the sort of AA haters are all on that list before anything at AA.org or even intergroups, and it's an issue. So I got to looking last year when we started having these conversations, and I was trying to find some experience out there. I talked to GSO to see if they had any experience with this type of thing, and did some searching myself, and I found a group. I want to say it might have been the Netherlands, who sort of took on that problem locally themselves and decided to do some online advertising. And I've been involved in public information for a while in different areas and districts, and I knew AA does billboards, so advertising, and we do public service announcements, but I wasn't aware of any sort of online paid advertising that AA does. And so it's interesting, this entity out in I might be wrong about the Netherlands, but they had all these discussions about whether they should do it or not, and ended up doing it on a trial run, and it sounded like it was moderately successful. Like they were able to, run some online ads and get some, people to actually go to the site. Considering billboards, when districts or areas pay money for billboards to put up on, highways, everybody's seeing it. But when in online search, only the people who are searching for those terms that you're bidding on are seeing it. So it's really direct. So you're only going to be seeing it if you're actually searching for it. One of the reasonings which I was reminded of at the last meeting I attended. So one of the reasonings that the that was in the notes from the entity in the Netherlands was I am responsible. I am responsible when anyone anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I am responsible. And it's like when you do that Google search after you get out of this meeting, where are we? We're nowhere to be found. So I don't know. It's super interesting to be involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and in, like I said, district service has always been like my favorite level to be involved on, involved in, because there's so many things you can do in a small committee setting. And I know districts vary in size and everything, but at that level, it's just you can take on a lot and innovate and sort of pioneer. I'm blown away by just trying to imagine what Bill W. Like if AA wasn't 80 years and a month old, if it was just 1 month old, like what it would be like. What would Bill and Bob and those early people be doing? It just blows me away to think about it. Like the tools that they would have at their disposal to get this message out there, the thing that's like saved their life and to tell people about it. I don't know. I don't know that those conversations are happening enough, locally at our groups and districts and areas. But there's just so much that could be done. And I feel like communication, amongst ourselves is just key, and that we should be having these types of conversations, how we can utilize so that we're not behind. I mean, for instance, like the conversation a few years ago about Facebook, I mean, by the time that conversation happened, it was like new things had come around that had sort of taken the place of that. AA moves so slow, which is a good thing, but by the time we figure some of this stuff out, there'll be something new to figure out that, we'll be behind on, basically. So, anyway, I feel like we need to figure out how to have these conversations and to move forward, and we need more groups and districts and committees to lead the way and to share that experience, whether it's successful or a dismal failure. I feel like that experience is really short right now. There's not much of it out there. So I would suggest everybody, if you're not involved in service, definitely get involved in service and try new stuff. And whether it fails or succeeds, tell GSO about it so that they can share with other, people and groups and committees that are calling and asking for that experience. And that's basically all. I don't want to go on too long, so thanks.